supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
The search for planets beyond our solar system that could sustain life reveals a candidate a mere 11 light-years away. Let's Go Sleuthing with Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. Derek, we'll talk about the planet, although on second thought, 11 light-years is still 11 light-years.
Yeah, it is still 11 light-years away. That's much further than we can get to in any reasonable amount of time with the kind of space transportation we have currently. Nonetheless, though, we've been able to detect quite a bit of information about this particular star and its planet that's looking very much like Earth, even if I say so myself. I'm not one to jump on the bandwagon immediately for every quote-unquote Earth-like candidate that shows up, which is quite frequently these days. But this one, this particular one, called Ross 128, seems to be much more like Earth, and fortunately, its star is a star that is benign enough to perhaps provide an environment where life could possibly develop.
What makes for a benign star?
In this case, it would have to be a star like our sun, in which the planet that we're speaking of is far enough away that the radiation bath that it gets is low enough that we can have an environment where life could develop. Now, this star is not a star like our sun. It is a red dwarf star. So it's much cooler in its temperature, and therefore the kind of radiation that it puts out is probably much safer than if it were a star like ours with a planet very close, or a class of star that was much more energetic.
But is Ross 128 close enough to derive warmth from this otherwise cooler star?
Well, as it turns out, it is close enough to not only derive enough warmth, but also to have a very short year. The year on this planet is only 9.9 days, only 10 days. So if you can imagine our year squished from 365 down to 10, you'd probably find it fairly dizzying, if anything. However, its distance from the planet puts it firmly in what would be considered the habitable zone, that distance from the sun where a planet could have water existing as a liquid. And that then sets up the scenario of possibility for life to develop.
Too far away to know for sure whether there is water on it?
Definitely too far for us to be able to tell if there is water there yet.
So what is the state of our telescopic sleuthing that we could eventually make that sort of determination?
This kind of discovery was done using a satellite in orbit that is measuring the radial velocity of the star. That measured radial velocity tells us that indeed there is a planet of a certain mass at a particular distance that we now can identify from the kind of radiation the star produces as being the correct distance for water to exist as a liquid, the habitable zone around that star.
Is that in part because this itty-bitty planet somehow disturbs the path, the trajectory, or other aspects of that sun's signal?
It absolutely does. This is a mass that's orbiting that star, and even though that mass is incredibly small compared to the star, it still has an effect on it. It still has an effect where it's pulling that star, and that small degree of wobble in the orbit of the star is detectable by this satellite to the degree that we can tell the mass of the object that's disturbing the motion of the star, and we can estimate its distance well enough to know that it's in the habitable zone. Unfortunately, we're still not at the point where we can directly, that is directly, image a planet orbiting another star. However, it looks like that possibility may dramatically increase in the future when we begin to bring online several what we can now identify as giant ground-based telescopes. That's the Giant Magellan Telescope, 30-meter telescope, the European Extremely Large Telescope, that actually should be able to image Ross 128 once they come online in the not-too-distant future.
We've certainly solved the puzzle of factoring out any atmospheric effects for land-based telescopes. Does this eliminate the need to send a telescope into space?
Hubble Space Telescope has certainly been unprecedented in the kind of visual work it's been able to do from above the Earth's atmosphere. The images are simply incomparable to what we have on the ground. But these newer technologies are so advanced and are anticipated to bring us such incredible results that perhaps the need for space-based visual telescopes, that's in the visual portion of the spectrum, may no longer be necessary. We'll still need, though, telescopes outside of the visible portion of the spectrum, in the gamma ray spectrum, the X-ray spectrum, the ultraviolet, even the infrared spectrum, that can deliver us that kind of information that has great difficulty penetrating the Earth's atmosphere.
As you cite Edwin Hubble, let's extend birthday greetings, though he, of course, is also beyond this mortal coil.
He's been gone for quite some time now, but today we recognize the 128th anniversary of his birth. Edwin Hubble certainly has been one of the most important figures to emerge into the realm of astronomical research. Without his work, it may have been some time before we realized that there's not just one galaxy, our Milky Way galaxy, but there are millions of galaxies. And so his ability to collect data that led to his dramatic revelation certainly changed our understanding of the universe at every level. You now began to realize that the universe was not only far more populous than originally expected, but also much larger, because one of the other things that Hubble brought to the table was the understanding that not only are there more galaxies, but that those galaxies are all moving, and some moving away from us and each other at incredible rates of speed that could only define the universe as being far more enormous, if I can say it that way, than we ever imagined before.
Families gathering during this Thanksgiving week provides a wonderful opportunity to work off turkey and fixins by going out of doors and seeing what's available in the night sky.
And in an effort to work off some of that turkey and stuffing, it might be the morning after Thanksgiving that you decide to take an early morning walk. If the sky is clear, you'll find over on the eastern horizon that Jupiter and Venus still dominate around 6 a.m. until sunrise. If you don't think you'll make it up that early, in the evening, you'll have a really wonderful crescent moon to keep an eye on through the week. But strictly speaking, Saturn and Mercury are still found very low in the southwestern sky after sunset, but you'll need a clear view of the horizon to catch them.
Derek, happy Thanksgiving to you and yours.
Same to you, David.
Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. He joins us each week at this time on Newsworks Tonight.